next text, and we're going to the word-by-word synonyms. Urvashimantato jayan adaranran imuttaram atmanam hubayamatye yattat vajananam prabhu. So you can repeat. Stadhisthanam.
Stadhisthanam.
The place where Agnishthali was left. Gataha. Going there. Ashvata.
An Ashvata tree.
Ashami Garbam. Produced from the womb of the Shami tree. Vilaksha. Seen. Saha. He Pururava. Tena. From that. Dvay. Two. Arani.
Pieces of wood.
Required for igniting a fire for sacrifice. Kritva. Making. Urvashiloka kamnyaya.
Desiring to go to the planet.
Where Urvashi was present. Urvashim.
Urvashi.
Mantrataha. By chanting the required mantra. Yayam. Meditating upon. Adara. Lower. Aranin. Arani wood. Uttanam, and the upper one. Atmanam, himself. Ubayor Madhye, in between the two. Yattat,
that which he meditated upon.
Prajnanam, as a son. Prabhu, the king. So translation, when the process of fruitive yajna became manifest within his heart, King Pururava went to the same spot where he had left Agnishthali. There he saw that from the womb of a Shami tree, an Ashvata tree had grown. He then took a piece of wood from that tree and made it into two aranis. Desiring to go to the planet where Urvashi resided, he chanted mantras, meditating upon the lower Arani as Urvashi, the upper one as himself, and the piece of wood between them as his son. In this way, he began to ignite a fire. You'll repeat. When the process of fruitive yajna became manifest within his heart, King Pururava went to the same spot where he had left Agnishthali. There he saw that from the womb of a Shami tree, an Ashvata tree had grown. He then took a piece of wood from that tree and made it into two aranis. Desiring to go to the planet where Urvashi resided, he chanted mantras, meditating upon the lower Arani as Urvashi, the upper one as himself, and the piece of wood between them as his son. In this way, he began to ignite a fire. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Vedic fire for performing yajna was not ignited with ordinary matches or similar devices. Rather, the Vedic sacrificial fire was ignited by the aranis, or two sacred pieces of wood, which produced fire by friction with a third. Such a fire is necessary for the performance of yajna. If successful, a yajna can fulfill the desire of its performer. Thus, Garudava took advantage of the process of yajna to fulfill his lusty desires. He thought of the lower Arani as Urvashi, and the upper one as himself, and the middle one as his son. A relevant Vedic mantra quoted herein by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is Shami Garva Agnim Manta. A similar mantra is Urvasham Urvasi Pururavaha. Pururava wanted to have children continuously by the womb of Urvashi. His only ambition was to have sex life with Urvashi and thereby get a son. In other words, he had so much lust in his heart that even while performing yajna, he thought of Urvashi instead of thinking of the master of yajna, Yageshwara, Lord Vishnu. Omagana Timaranda Shah, Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena, Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Anyway, it's interesting how we lit the fire. And actually, in Boy Scouts, they actually teach you how to do the same thing. Anyone who's on the Boy Scouts, or now they've changed the name from Boy Scouts, just the Scouts, because they're having girls in the Boy Scouts. But anyway, that's a different subject matter. So they would take two pieces of wood and put like a little string between it and rub it. And so it would be very nice if you started fire sacrifices like that in this kind, because you're not really supposed to use matches. I remember there was one devotee who wanted to impress people when he was doing fire sacrifices, and he put in an electronic igniter in the fire and put some hidden wire between himself and the electronic igniter, and he just did swaha and pushed the button and the fire went people, wow, this is a real Brahmin. I'd probably do that. I haven't done it, but I would probably do something like that. But anyway, so that's just a secondary topic here. I think the real topic is, to me, how determined Pururava is. You know, I'm impressed. In fact, if I was a psychiatrist, I would say he has an obsessive-compulsive disorder. I don't know if any of you know what that means. That means when you're really obsessed with something. I mean, just think of all the things he went through, and he's still like focused on Urvashi. That first of all, she leaves him, then he just wanders all over the earth for some time, finds her, you know, by the banks of the Saraswati, and then she says, once a year you can come, and he comes once a year to see her. He's not satisfied, you know, the rest of the year he's just like absorbed in her. And then they give him an imitation, clone of Urvashi. He's not happy with that, Agnishtali. And then he just like, just so upset, and he's continually meditating on her. And then when the yuga changes for the performance of yajna, that is, you know, the fire sacrifice rather than the meditation, he just like gets so determined. I mean, that is real determination, isn't it? So I'm really impressed. Of course, Krishna in the Gita talks about determination and different modes of nature, right? In the mode of passion, one is really determined. In the mode of goodness, one is really determined. And in the mode of ignorance, one's determination never goes beyond procrastination. Procrastination means putting it off, or putting something off for tomorrow that you can do today, or putting something off forever that you can do today. And we saw that when I was at the university. The students would generally procrastinate as far as their studies are concerned, and at the time of the final exam, you know, one night before the final exam, they would just stay up all night long doing what we would call cramming. In other words, they would cram all the information into their little brains that were filled with marijuana smoke or whatever. And then they regurgitate the information the next day. And I never crammed when I was at the university. Why? Because every day I studied, I took my notes, and so when it came time to the final exams, I just was really relaxed. So anyway, that's the proper attitude. So anyway, the mode, that's mode of ignorance, that you put off of what something you can do today or something you could do beforehand, and you just wait to the very last minute. It's crazy. You know, I've been with people, I'm not mentioning names, who go to the airport just when they're pulling the bridge away from the airplane. There's one sannyasi, actually, was, had that habit of doing that. I drove him to the airport one time, and I was having a heart attack, you know, thinking, oh my God. And we get to the gate. This is before security and everything like that. And they're pulling the gate away, and he just demands that they pull the gate back. And they did it. I'm just going, oh my God. But then you have someone like Bhaktivinoda Thakur who would get to the, not airport, because they didn't have planes there, but he would get to the train station about 2 or 3 hours early. You know, sometimes people say, why are you going too early? So he could actually just relax and chant and read and not be frenetic doing things at the last minute. So, you know, mode of ignorance sort of. Of course, if you're completely in the mode of ignorance, you won't even do things at the last minute. You just put it off and say, well, couldn't do it anyway. And then go back to sleep. You're a genuine lazy person. You know, in other words, like that story the Prabhupada told, if they set fire to your house, you'll just stay there because you don't have the gumption to leave the house. You just like roll over so you don't fry both sides unequally. You know, that's completely in the mode of ignorance. And you see that. I mean, sometimes people are completely in the mode of ignorance, but that's very rare. Except when they're intoxicated, completely intoxicated. So anyway, so in the mode of passion, one is enthusiastic because of fruitive desire. Very enthusiastic. And in the mode of goodness, one is enthusiastic because of steadfastness in yoga, which generally means in the material mode of goodness, that one wants liberation from this world. One becomes very determined. And the transcendental mode, if you can call it a mode, but the transcendental mood, is one is very determined to please the senses of Krishna. And that's also like lust. Like you see the gopis, their mood is very similar. Externally, you know, if you look at it from an external viewpoint, to Parurava. Whoops, message. So their mood is very similar to Parurva, because they're so determined, so focused on Krishna, that they leave their poor husbands, who happen to be actually expansions of Krishna. They leave their little babies. I mean, how many ladies are going to just like drop their babies off? They didn't drop them, obviously. They weren't that determined. Anyway, they were determined, but they were darned too. And so they relinquished all society's respectability just when Krishna played his flute. And that's the focus the gopis had. That's the determination. That's the, even if you want to use the word obsession, just like here we're talking about an obsession that someone has. So, where do obsessions come from? It's very interesting. Of course, I'm not talking in the clinical sense now, you know, talking about someone's like history or talking about, actually, there's many books about obsessive compulsive disorder, and I've read many of them. Not that I have obsessive compulsive disorder, but I know a lot of people do, like Lady Macbeth. Out of that damn spot. Anyway, so where did it come from? This obsession, let's forget about it. Well, compulsive too, you know, compulsive, like devotees seem to have obsessive compulsive disorder. Like they're chanting, like I was in an airplane once and I was chanting on the beads and you know, the stewardess runs up and says, "Everything will be all right, sir." Because my mouth was moving and my hands were chatting, you know, like this. They thought, "Oh my God, he's worried we're going to die." And this is the time when the plane was landing. So, sometimes we seem to have obsessive compulsive. So we should become obsessive compulsive about Krishna. So where does this obsessive compulsivity come from? Well, Krishna describes, as far as in the material world, it comes from karanam guna sangasya. Sarasa jama jonishu. It comes from association with the modes of contemplation. What do I mean by association? Like Prabhupada would often say, depending on who you are associated with, that's the way you'll become. And you see this association. I mean, it's really so effective. I mean, I remember one time I was in charge of a temple in South America, and the devotees were distributing books in the mall. And in the mall, they started playing some, salsa music. Because I don't even know what that is. They started playing salsa music, and the devotee who was doing sangha, we went out to see the devotee doing sangha, and he was dancing to the salsa music. He became absorbed in that mood. Just from inadvertently contemplating, I mean, it's hard to avoid when you're in the mall and they're playing the music and everything like that. Contemplating that salsa music, and he became absorbed in that same mood. Like that, he was dancing. So it all comes from association with certain modes of nature and contemplating that. And of course, this verse we always quote in regard to that, Jayato Vishak Sangas Teshu Pajayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kama Kuru Pajayate. When you contemplate things, and we're not just talking about contemplating things externally, there's certain thoughts that come to the mind and you just contemplate. Like here, King Pururava is not really contemplating things externally, because externally all that's happening is a fire sacrifice. And he's actually performing worship of Vishnu too. This is pointed out later on in the chapter. So externally, he's chanting, you know, later on you read, Om, Om Tad Vishnu Param Pada Pashanti Yat Surya, because if he's doing Vedic mantras, the Vedic mantras always start with Om, and within the Rig Veda you have this very interesting verse, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Pada Pashanti Yat Surya, that all the demigods, they are looking to Vishnu. So he's obviously worshipping Vishnu. That's pointed out in this verse too. He's not just doing one of these tantric sacrifices that was questioned about yesterday. You know, tantric sacrifices, not worship of Vishnu. It's like eating out of the skull, you know, worshipping Vajrakali, or worshipping some other deity, like we mentioned yesterday, that Ravana and his associates and Indrajit, they had this deity, Nikumba. Who knows who Nikumba is? I don't know. Maybe it's an expansion of Durga. Anyway, they were worshipping Nikumba. But Pururava here is worshipping Krishna. But where is his mind? His mind is just like contemplating, meditating, becoming attached. Jayatal, Vishak, Pumsa. Meditate on Urvashi. Again and again, Urvashi, he's chanting Hare Krishna, he's meant, or chanting the names of God, or doing Vedic sacrifice. But what's really happening in his mind is Urvashi. I must have Urvashi. Where is Urvashi? I'm feeling so lonely. Life is worthless. A moment of separation from Urvashi is like 12 years or more. I mean, even, of course, sometimes you hear this in the country and western songs. Like, oh, I miss Peggy Sue. I'm so blue. Because she left me for someone new. Pretty good. Anyway, so therefore, that's his contemplating. So, how to break that, that's really hard. How to break someone's like obsession like that with that, with that. I mean, how would you deal, my question is, how would we deal if we were there with King Pururava? I mean, how would I deal? First of all, I wouldn't chastise him. Because if I chastised him for being in Maya, guess what? Anyone have any ideas? He'd go deeper. As I, if I started to preach to him, what is that? Upadesho hi murtanam prakon paya nashantaye. If you give good instructions to a fool, what happens?
He gets
disturbed. Nashantaye. Upadesho hi murtanam prakon paya nashantaye. So it would actually be committing offenses on the strength of chanting. This is actually a perfect example. That I would be committing offenses if I preached to Pururava. So how would I deal with it? Well, actually, the way I would deal with it is tell him to keep worshiping Lord Krishna. Because Chaturvidha Bhajanti Mam, as Krishna says in the Gita, people come to Krishna consciousness for ulterior purposes. Simple like that, right? And so Krishna recognizes that. Krishna doesn't chastise someone for coming to him for ulterior purposes, but akama, moksha kama. As Krishna says, and not Krishna, as the Bhagavatam says, whether one is free of material desires, whether one is full of material desires, sarva kama, moksha kama, dharati, tivrena, bhakti yogena, yajeta purusham param. That's what Bhagavatam says. Whether one is full of material desires, free of material desires, or desires of liberation, moksha, then tivrena, one should be, this is actually what Pururva is doing here. I mean, he's a great soul, because he's worshipping Krishna to achieve his desires. I mean, it's not pure devotional service, definitely sakama bhakti, but still, he's engaged in devotional service. So I would probably just say, you know, to him, just chant, you know, that happened nowadays. Let's see, if I ran into someone so determined to be with his beloved, let's say there was, I mean, just like the earth planet, let's say someone's girlfriend left him, I would just say, pray to Krishna to get her back. Here's this mantra. I would actually say that to him. I wouldn't say, you know, this is Maya, you know, this nonsense girlfriend. She's just a bag of stool. Because that, Urvashi already tried that. It just, you know, just made him think she's cute. You know, the same thing happened with Mohini Murthy. She tried that, isn't it, on the demons? She said, you know, heart is like a razor, you know, don't trust me. Oh, isn't that cute? She's being honest. It doesn't work, so. Anyway. So if I had someone like that, you know, some really obsessed, I mean, not only about that, you know, like, obsessed that they wanted not only a girlfriend or they wanted a car, or they want, I mean, people want so many things. Sarvakam. They want so many things. It's like, okay, so we have someone in our community, he wants to be president of the United States, isn't it? So we don't tell him, that's nonsense. Well, if you chant Hare Krishna sincerely, Krishna will do it. You become president of the United States. If Krishna wants, of course. I mean, I guarantee. We don't put guarantees on what Krishna does. But Krishna could do it. So, yeah, chant and pray. Pray for that. You know, when you're chanting, pray. Hare Krishna, let me become president. Let me become president. Because otherwise they're not going to chant anyway. If you say, give up your desire and chant, they'll just get angry with you. So you say, chant, and pray to Krishna. And then, of course, as Dhruva Maharaj did not want to become president of the United States. He wanted to become bigger than president of Lord Brahma, bigger than Lord Brahma, right? I mean, that's pretty good. Talk about having a desire. So anyway, so he wanted a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma, and he got it. But when he got it, he said, I was looking for some piece of broken glass, and I found a wonderful gem. And that's Krishna. And he didn't have that desire anymore. So eventually, Pururava, you know, will understand things. You know, just give the guy some time. You know, he does go back to Urvashi. He does go to the heavenly planets, but he's considered a great soul at the same time. So, anyway, so how do we apply this to ourselves? I already described how I would apply this understanding to others. But to ourselves, we should be aware of our desire, not in denial. Because if we suppress, or if we repress, two different words. Suppress means we're aware, we're keeping it down. Repress means we're in denial that we're keeping some desire down. And people do that. They repress their desires by criticizing the sense objects sometimes. I mean, like, sometimes in the past we had brahmacharis that criticized women. And, you know, Prabhupada said to one sannyasi, of course he was joking, he said, you're criticizing, because he was criticizing young Brahmin who had the deity of Sakshi Gopal go all the way across India. He said, you're criticizing this young Brahmin. It was a sannyasi criticizing the young Brahmin because Prabhupada said he was a pure devotee, and the sannyasi said if he was such a pure devotee, why did he want to get married? And Prabhupada said to the sannyasi, you're saying this because no one would have you. And Prabhupada, it was joking. You know, it was a joking relationship. So we should be perfectly honest and not act externally and not act internally or think internally that we're free from material desires or a higher platform of devotional service. We have some material desires. I'm not really advocating that we pray to Krishna for material desires, but if it's so intense that it's just disturbing your mind, pray to Krishna for it. You know, it's better that than let it disturb your mind and not pray to Krishna. Be honest, like internally honest. That's it. Honesty is one of the things that's, you know, really missing amongst spiritualists, because when you repress desires, Krishna says, what good will repression accomplish? And then ultimately it comes out in what we call sublimated ways. I mean, in other words, like a balloon, you just like squeeze one portion of the balloon, and just like we had our sadhvi here, she makes balloon puppets and things like that. And so the way she does it, she squeezes one portion and the other portion pops out. So in the same way, one represses the desires. Let's say you really want Urvashi, you just meditate on Urvashi. Of course, he was honest. Pururva was honest. I mean, you got to give it to him. He didn't say, I'm a good brahmachari, and inside he was just meditating. He wasn't a pretender. Which is a lot different than modern-day politicians and leaders of society. They should just be honest. I'm a dog. That would be interesting. Have some politicians say, I'm just a dog. That would be respectable. That would be respectful. I'm just a dog. I just want to run after all the Me Toos. Anyway, so it's better to be honest about these things. So one should be honest about their position. And you see that so many cases that when spiritualists are not honest, it's a big problem in spiritual life. Anyway, but if you want to overcome these things, let's say you want to overcome this obsession, then you just, instead of letting your mind circulate like with this feedback loop, I mean, there's ways to get out of it. There are ways to get out of it if you really want to get out of it. I mean, of course, not just chanting Hare Krishna, but there's psychological ways to get out of it. Instead of letting the mind just go in a feedback loop, I mean, I remember there was one devotee who kept saying to me, things are bad, it's really bad, it's never been so bad, it's always been bad. I go, oh my God. And it's just like the mind just feeds into itself over and over again. I mean, that is the definition of obsessive behavior. I mean, that is the definition. The mind just feeds into itself. You put something else in there. If you really want to deal with it, you can't stop the feedback loop, but you can actually insert something else. Like Prabhupada said, of course, the mind is the devil's workshop, obviously. He said that, and then you just put something else that is in accordance with your psychophysical nature that you can actually meditate on. Like that. You know, let's say you contemplate money, let's give an example. Money is the honey. Then you can start thinking of how to get money for Krishna. How to get things for Krishna. You can actually transform that feedback loop, transform that contemplation into something that's Krishna conscious. Like Prabhupada said, a devotee, he defined a pure devotee, a Mahabhagwat, as one who is always meditating, that means obsessive, on how to bring others to Krishna consciousness, how to expand the Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada talks about it, always following the principles too, but always contemplating how to bring others to Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada defined that as a Mahabhagwat, as a Uttama Adhikar. So you can become obsessed with that, always making plans how to do that. So you can substitute one obsession for another. You can contemplate something that will be productive for you in spiritual life, rather than something that will be counterproductive for you in spiritual life. It's as simple as that. Contemplating how you can serve. So, yes, you can overcome this feedback loop by doing that, because the feedback loop will lead you in all sorts of directions. Like, you know, even psychologically, I'm unhappy, I've never been so unhappy, I've always been unhappy, I will always be unhappy. What's the use of this life? Better to end it now. Oh, yeah. Go for it. Anyway, I don't know if it's exactly like that. But anyway. But one has to be conscious of the feedback loop that occurs in the mind and then counteract it in some way. Counteract it and be honest about it. But understand, it's just a feedback loop. You can just put anything else in there you want. Hopefully you put in Krishna. All right, so any other questions or comments? Any questions or comments? Or arguments or problems or issues? Or obsessions? I'm obsessed with Krishna. That would be nice.
I was curious about, you talk about honesty, being honest with ourselves and actually with others as well, in our relationships and in our actions too.
Yeah.
But I'm also thinking about how to be honest. I mean, obviously, I think internally maybe is the most important.
Yeah, that's the most important.
You know, sometimes
don't fool yourself.
To be honest, you know, and reveal your mind and to express yourself as you are, as a person, like a physical nature, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But then there's the challenge of revealing your mind and confidence, because there are times when it's taken out of context and sometimes even used
against you.
Yeah,
you have to be careful. When I was talking about being honest with others, it doesn't mean really like spilling your guts out to everybody. It means don't put yourself or show yourself to be in a position where that you're not qualified for. That's really what I'm talking about. Once taking on the position of guru, once taking on the position of spiritual leader, don't make believe that you're something that you're not. That's really what I would. Because it's really bad. I mean, then you'll have like two lives. You know, then you'll be a hypocrite. In other words, like you see so many, I remember there have been so many preachers, and I'm not talking about ISKCON specifically right now, but so many preachers who on the side, and then they're discovered in the French Quarter of New Orleans, not having Harinam, but, you know, they're discovered with a prostitute. You know, just like even Prabhupada was talking to this one cardinal, and I won't mention his name, and the cardinal was arguing with Prabhupada about eating meat. Prabhupada kept saying, you know, Jesus said, thou shalt not kill. And they're having this like basic argument. Later on, the cardinal was found outside of the prostitute's apartment in Paris. So there's an idea. There's someone who was just not honest. You know, he should have just said, you know, I'm resigning from the position of being cardinal, or I shouldn't have taken up the position of being cardinal, or whatever. That's what I talk about, honesty. It doesn't mean just really publicly spilling your guts. That expression is interesting. Spilling your guts. Oh my God. So it means, you know, you can do that with someone who is a very close associate, you can trust and everything like that. Even if you don't have someone, you don't have someone. But what you shouldn't present themselves as something that they're not. And we see this in spirituality. In Kali Yuga, this is so prominent. You have spiritual personalities. It's not referring to the Krishna conscious movement, not referring to any movement, church, whatever, specifically. But I've seen so many personalities present themselves. And something like Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, he had these interactions with Babaji's who had not had a listen, who were not celibate, at least even for like 2 or 3 days. And this is Kali Yuga. Because they were fighting over who would take the body of Srila Gaura Kishore Babaji Maharaj. And finally Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur said, anyone can take his body who has not had a list of sex for a month, then 2 weeks, then like 3 or 4 days or whatever it is. And nobody came forward. So that's really the problem in Kali Yuga. That the principle of truthfulness is actually diminishing very quickly. And one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga is that people will think spirituality or religion is just a change of dress. That's in the Bhagavatam. So one should really be honest. That's what I mean by honesty. Don't spill your guts. At least not in the temple room. So